Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of The Addict's Advocate. I am your host, Dusty Dean, and it's my pleasure to introduce a good friend of mine by the name of James. How are you, sir?
Good. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. First of all, I appreciate you spending some of your Sunday with me and talking some things out. And I know you have a unique story, so it's something I always want to share with my listeners because I think that, you know, there's that one person out there that could benefit from your insight, from your struggles, and it's something that may catalyze them to go and, you know, seek help and to get better themselves. So, as I always do, we typically just start off, you know, give a little background on yourself.
Yeah. So, current day, I am 39. I live in Danville, California. I'm a California native. I grew up in Ventura, California, in SoCal. Went to Ventura High. Went to NorCal for college. So I went to UC Davis. Spent a lot of time in Davis and kind of that area for a bit, and then went to the East Bay. And then I've kind of really never left other than a blip here and there to move to Atlanta real quick and do some work out that way, but pretty much came back immediately. I have a long-term partner. We have a daughter together. We have a house together. So my daughter is now, she's just about to be 16 months. So it's been quite the trip, but it's been rad.
Awesome. Awesome. What, how long do you think you've been battling, you know, an addiction of some sort?
Yeah, I was kind of like reading that in the prep questions, and it's certainly a good question to think about, you know, because you're kind of like, seems like forever, but like, could I get more narrow about it? I guess to kind of talk about it a little bit, it's like, I remember I certainly like fell in with a crowd and we like drank in high school and did quite a bit of that. And our activities were basically centered around drinking. So drinking has like always been an issue for me on one way or another. I feel like even going to college, like I ended up like my third day at college, like just a random acquaintance like came up to me and was like, "Hey dude, like I've got this like real ID that somebody else, you know, who's like 27 or something." And so like, I literally had an ID, you know, like the third day of college. And so like, I bought alcohol for like everyone. And I feel like part of my deal was like, you know, I'm like, well, if I'm hanging out with people that are like drinking more than I am, like clearly I'm not the one with the problem. Like they're the one with the problem. So I feel like that was like part of it, but I mean, there was definitely times where I was like, I don't quite remember getting home, like definitely some risky behaviors. And, you know, that definitely just kind of persisted for a while. And I was kind of like, in your early 20s, you're just kind of like, it's college, man. We're young and having fun. And like, maybe that's not a problem or indicative of anything in particular. But I feel like at least intellectually, I knew that there was definitely alcoholism that ran on like both sides of my family. My mom's first generation Irish and, you know, that whole side of the family definitely had a problem. And then on my dad's side was German and English and certainly a lot of alcoholism going on there from my like grandfather specifically. And so I was aware that like I was probably at risk for it and certainly like showed some of those behaviors for sure. I feel like, you know, I had a long-term relationship in college that fell apart shortly thereafter. And like drinking was definitely a big part of it. It was like a huge part of like depression and like ending college and trying to find a job and like not succeeding there and just kind of like feeling like I'm failing at life kind of feeling, you know, and really like noticing that my only coping mechanism was just to like drink more. So That relationship ended, and that was definitely pretty heartbreaking. But it was definitely a poignant moment in my life because I remember being like, well, that relationship's over and that definitely sucks, but like, at least I don't have to quit drinking. You know what I mean? Like, like this is a silver lining somehow. And so that kind of persisted. That was probably when I was 25. And like I, at that point, I was kind of like, well, this is something I have to keep an eye on, but you know, I can like control it and maybe, you know, like I'll overdo it from time to time, but I'll make up for it in other ways. I feel like in the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, it had come to the point of like, I was just like, anytime I'm going to drink, I was like, well, if I want to drink, like, okay, like, yeah, let's have a drink. But I started to realize that I was like, well, when I'm committing myself to like having a drink, I'm really not committing myself to having a drink. I'm like committing myself to having like 10 drinks or more or something, you know, like it was very rare that it was going to be like one drink. And so I'd start to like kind of think that way and be like, you know, try to outplay that sort of addictive behavior by being like, oh, well, I'll just not drink, you know, like that'll solve the problem. Like, cause I cannot drink today. And like, clearly I have no problem. I can control my drinking by not drinking today. And then like drink tomorrow and like drink like 10 drinks or something. So like that sort of thing. And then I started noticing like my memory was worse. It was certainly like, you know, stupid, terrible arguments with my partner were like worse, you know, like being not present or like pissed off at family or any combination thereof. And then like, it was like it started to just become like the days that you don't drink are like, you know, those are the one-offs. like I didn't drink that day. Like, good for me. Like, wow, that's impressive. yeah. So when I started to realize like, oh, I really have a problem like with just having one drink. Like I never just want one drink. It would become like, I want to have one drink and like, I'll just stop drinking, you know, at the restaurant or bar that I'm at so I can go home and like drink there because like, that's the responsible thing to do. Like I'll have 10 drinks at home instead of 10 drinks, you know, out at a restaurant or a bar. And I feel like when my daughter was born, you know, November of 22 was, you know, I was kind of like, I just know that I am not my best self. I'm like not even close to mine. I'm probably closer to my worst self, you know, when I drink, if like it's all true. And I don't think I'm going to be able to like maintain a relationship with my daughter in the way that I like really want to if I keep drinking. Like I clearly can't control it. And so like knowing that intellectually, or at least thinking that, believing that intellectually, kind of led me to like drink more. Like I felt like I was like saying goodbye to my drug and like just going on a lot of binging. And that like started to like damage. I felt like my health was starting to take a toll. It was bad. It was like started to get real bad. And so I feel like there was a turning point a few times in the last like maybe 2 years where I was like, you know, like had like a binge, like a blackout sort of binge. And, you know, I woke up feeling terrible about myself. Like, you know, had to go look through my phone of all the things I did and said, and was just like wildly inappropriate or terrible or dumb. And it was just stuff that I was like completely ashamed of. And I was just like, God damn, dude. Like, so at first I had like contacted this company. I don't know if you've heard of this. It was called Monument. But that was the first time that I had like reached out for help. And they had given me, what's the drug that they, I haven't been on it in a while.
It's like Ativan?
No, the, like the one that they give like everybody who, you know, to like
Suboxone? Kind of feel
drinking craving.
Huh.
Do you remember?
Yeah. Mine was Ativan.
Trazodone? No.
Oh, maybe it's Trazodone.
Yeah. Either way. So they like they prescribed that, and they were like, oh, well, you know, like this will kind of like kill your cravings for it. And it was like, oh, well, that's kind of cool, like neat, like I'll be a like normal person and I can have a normal interaction with alcohol. And so that kind of actually worked for like, I don't know, a few months. I like took it and like could drink and like have a drink or two and kind of feel like, all right, like I don't really feel like a whole lot different. And but eventually I was able to like drink through it, and then like it just never worked again for me, really, in terms of like killing the cravings or like stopping it at one or two drinks. And I kind of just like was like, well, that's that, like that solution failed. And I just didn't think I was like ready to quit cold turkey until I had like another one of those just like full, you know, kind of weekend benders of, you know, feeling terrible and feeling shameful and also, you know, some really like dangerous behaviors, like being, you know, completely blacked out and knowing that I somehow drove home or got home and not really sure how that happened. So like those sorts of things, I was just like, all right, like enough is enough. And so I had to take leave from work just to like enter an IOP group. I just felt like, you know, I've never taken off work to like do anything like this. And so like, I just wanted to focus on it and I had the luxury of doing that. And so I looked up the IOP group that you and I went to and kind of did my 90 days there. And that was kind of the start of my journey, as it were.
So you never had to go a full intensive, like 30 days in house, huh? You were able to do this basically on a part-time basis to get clean. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it was because the way that I drank was like, it was rare that I like, you know, felt like every single day I had to drink. Like if I felt terrible, like I frequently like just didn't drink. And like, I was very much a binge drinker. Like that is how I do things. And so it was like, you know, I could go like a couple weeks and not drink and be like, I'm totally fine. Like who can go 2 weeks without drinking and then like be an alcoholic? Like that's absurd. turns out it's not absurd. And so, the cravings to drink, like really, like I never had like really, really, really strong cravings. Like where I was just like, oh, like, you know, white knuckling it a lot. I feel like I've had a lot of like slow, creepy thoughts about like alcohol and using a more along the lines of like your brain, like trying to be like, it's fine. You know, like, yeah. Like you don't have a problem. Like you solve the problem by admitting you have a problem. Like you could probably go back to drinking, like that kind of stuff. Right. And so I really found the IOP group really helpful. It's not something like, I think I even said this in the IOP group. I don't know if you were there at that time, but it was like, if I had known what IOP group was, like if somebody had actually like described it or shown me a video of it, I would have never gone. I would have been like, no, that sounds horrific. Like, there's no way that I want to sit there for 3 hours and like listen to people, you know, talk about their feelings and shit. Like, I had no interest in that whatsoever or talking about myself. When I first got there, I was pretty quiet. I did a lot of listening and like that is kind of generally how I go and listen. But, you know, when I listened, I kind of had the experience that I feel like a lot of people like us have, which is like, oh, like you did that too? Like, oh, all right. Well, suppose I am not singular or unique in any particular way. I'm just another one of us struggling with addiction. And so it was a very cathartic experience to like go through and like really commit to that time and do it. And after a while, like I really felt like I was leaning on it. You know, I went into it like, all right, I'm going to like give something to this, like put some effort into this. And then I felt like, you know, halfway through it, I was like taking from it. You know what I mean? Like I was kind of taking some strength out of it. I was feeling like, even if I felt like I really didn't want to go, like I didn't want to, it's kind of like going to the gym, you know, like when you really don't want to go and then you go and you're like, that was good. I'm glad I went. I feel much better. It started to be like that. And then I started to like really lean on it in terms of like when I did go like back to work after a month off, I like really wanted to like go to an IOP group and then like go to work and then like have an IOP group after that to just be like decompress my thoughts. And so like that was a super helpful group for me to be in. My home environment has been really positive. So like my partner, I think that she has always like known. I mean, I even told her when we started the relationship that like I have a concern about my like relationship with alcohol. I think it's like a problem, but I'm like, it's a problem I don't want to deal with right now. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't deal with for like 10 years. So I think that she was kind of in the mindset of like, this is something we're going to like get to in the future. Like this is, will be the ultimate conclusion no matter what. I think that she kind of came to the conclusion that this was required sooner. Like I was, you know, like I kind of came to that kind of group consensus of like, wow, like kind of thought this was going to be like a mid 40s, early 50s sort of thing. And like, you know, was kind of like, nope, like this is a now thing. Maybe this was a 5 years ago thing. Who knows? Or earlier. But she's been super supportive of me kind of doing this work, taking this time. And like, obviously, like we have a, you know, we have a brand new kid baby. Like this is our first baby also. Like, so, you know, we don't know anything. And so, you know, like taking 12 hours, 9 hours a week to at night to go do this thing for myself, essentially, was not a small, you know, ask of her and my small family, as it were. So it was a, it felt like a lot at the time. Like I can't imagine like what it would be like, honestly, like going to a 30 day, like away. I could see how that'd be super helpful. But it just seemed like such a big ask of my family, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's nice that you obviously have, you have a strong, you know, relationship with your partner, and you've got, obviously you're a busier man now, right, than you were a couple of years ago with raising a child. How's the rest of the family taking it, the sobriety, and how's the relationship?
You know, I mean, my stepdad has been, like, my stepdad has been in my life since I was, like, 3 or 4. And he's been sober that entire time. So I think he just got his, like, 34-year chip or something like that in AA. I will say that I feel like part of my abhorrence to AA previously has been listening to my stepdad talk about AA my entire life. And none of that sounding appealing to me at all. but... so, you know, it's not like my mom didn't really drink very much. My dad didn't really drink really much, largely because they had super alcoholic parents. So it's not like I had like a example, like there wasn't a lot of booze in my house or like any of that. Like I would say that like my partner's family, they like to drink a lot more, and I certainly like participated in that with them quite a bit. So I feel like it was kind of a surprise to them that I was like calling it quits. I don't think it was a surprise to them that I was like, oh yeah, James like has a problem. They're like, well, yeah, like, you know, you have a problem. And then you kind of reel it in and then like, you know, whatever, this kind of thing. I'm like, well, that's all well and good, but yeah, I'm pretty much done here. So I feel like that was probably the biggest transition, because we live closer to my partner's family. Like all my family's down in Southern California, and so I don't see them a ton. But I see my partner's family, who's like in Pleasanton, like all the time. And so that family, it was like, I told them like, this is what I was doing. We went on vacation for the first time, and it was kind of just, I think for me, it was more along the lines of like holding myself accountable to this, like, and want to be in a situation like at first, like the first, like maybe 30 days, I think I kept it to myself that I was like what I was doing and where I was going. And my mother-in-law, who's very nosy, was always like, where's he going? Like, why isn't he available? Like, what's he doing at night? Is he having an affair? Like,
yeah. And the wife says, bye, dear. Have fun. And I'll see you later.
Yeah. Just hanging out in a room, bunch of alcoholics. So, so it was after those 30 days, I was kind of like, all right, like I feel committed to this. Like, this is something I want, like, not just that I feel I need to do, like I need to do, but that I want to do. And I feel like that was a big hurdle for me in terms of getting sober. It was like something that I always felt I needed to do and would do and never wanted to do. So, after I got past that point, I was like, all right, I'm like telling my family, like I'm telling my family, and like that way, like I can now hold myself even more accountable to that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want them necessarily like policing me, but I do want it to be known that like, this is a step I've taken, and like, I intend to take it forever. And so be a part of that with me. And so it's been important for me to share that. And then like with friends that like we have, you know, it's like I've certainly friends that I've drank with quite a bit, and I've just kind of slowly been like, yeah, like I don't drink anymore. So, and they've all been cool about it. Like, I mean, what do you say? You're just kind of like, oh, all right. Like, right. Good for you kind of thing. I feel like when people told me they weren't drinking, I was like, in the core of my being, I was kind of jealous. I was like, wow, like, I wish I had the courage or the desire to like actually take that step. And you did. And I'm like, just makes me want to have a drink kind of thing. So I don't know how they feel about it necessarily, but I can think back on like my friends now that I've like been in it for a while. I definitely like think of my friends and that have, you know, chosen to like get sober for whatever. And it's been like a big source of like kind of inspiration because they've all kind of done it different ways. Like one went like super hard in the AA direction. One was just like, I'm just doing my own thing. Like I'm just not drinking anymore and doing my other stuff. And like, you know, maybe not addressing some of the like root causes, but like, he's not drinking, so good for him. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, so I like that menagerie of people getting clean and how they're doing it. And that's why I really like the IOP group, because it didn't feel very like AA. Now, I will say that I have been going to an AA group that I really like in Danville. Every like Sunday I go, and it's just like a speaker meeting. It's down the street from my house. And that's been really helpful. Like it's been really nice just to listen to, like, I don't get everything out of like every time I go there, but it's nice to like stay close to the group and like just feel reminded, you know what I mean? Like, cause it is easy to like get busy and get not paying attention to it and feel like disconnected from like, it's like, oh yeah, like I'm not just not drinking. Like I have like a fucking problem. Like, you know what I mean? Like right. It needs like attention. Like regular right. attention to like not flare up and be an issue, right? Like it's always a mm-hmm. problem, but like for it to just like be to not be a serious issue for me. So that's been good. The aftercare group at IOP, I like that, and I have not been making the time to go back to that, and I do really want to go back to that because I like that too. I thought that was a pretty good like alternative to the AA model. It was like a good group of people, and so I'd like to keep doing that, but I've been trying to at least do the, like, go to the speaker meeting, be there and do that, be reminded every day and just kind of like those sorts of things.
You know, I'm doing the Wednesday night 6 to 7:30 aftercare, you know, and it's good, you know, it's definitely, it's really just a kind of a round table of, you know, how's the week been, you know?
Totally.
You know? And it's, yeah,
that's kind of what I enjoy about that one a little bit more is that it feels a little more intimate to me. Like the AA group that I go to is like hella big, like, you know, and the same people like talk and you're kind of just like, all right, whatever. Like, but I don't feel like it would feel as cathartic to me, like as talking in the aftercare group, because I feel like the aftercare group really like, it's very like, now it's your turn to talk and like, tell us how you've been. And like, you kind of just kind of get to get shit off your chest. You know what I mean? Like, and like people are there to kind of take those things with you. And like, one of the things we learned that has really stuck with me to some degree in IOP was like, you know, I don't even know what book we were reading out of. I think it was like one of the early readings that Michael was like beginning of the class kind of thing, but it was like, you know, the victories and successes you have like go by too quickly, and sharing them with a group allows you to really like savor those moments for longer. You know what I mean? And, you know, the stresses and failures and things that are challenges, like, bearing those burdens all alone really just kind of burdens you alone, and sharing them with people really kind of lightens the load.
Yeah. It releases it. Yeah.
Just even talking about it, not even asking for anything other than someone just to listen to you, just kind of say it actually just kind of lightens the load. And like, I found that to be absolutely true every time that I've done it. And that's one thing that I really love about how the IOP group and aftercare group are set up.
Nice. Do you find that you have like any lingering like mental health aspects that you are, you know, are maybe in the forefront more now that you're not masking it with alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always wondered if I like was dealing with like low grade depression at some point, but it's so hard to tell when you're like active in your using, because like it's such a like, you know, cycle of using and sober, and like I don't know, it's very hard to get like a read on it. But I can tell you that since I've stopped drinking, like those highs and lows have gone down so much that I don't think so. What I will say is that some of the AA's kind of stuff that you like hear people talk about, you know, this like notion of like rigorous honesty and like honesty in all of its various myriad like permutations that like you get into with like yourself and like others in relationships, you know, like those sorts of, I don't know what you'd even call them.
Almost like masks, if you
will. Like they're like cognitive dissonances.
Yeah.
That you end up like kind of like building, you know, your imperfect persona on, you know, if that's like makes any sense, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, for instance, somebody was talking today about just, you know, like it was actually somebody commenting on the speaker, and they're talking about every time I tell a story, like it starts out like, you know, reasonably high fidelity to what actually happened. And by the time I finish, like if I'm not careful, it's like completely exaggerated in every possible proportion. You know what I mean? And I thought that was super funny because it's like, that's something that like I do too. Like I like, and I'm like, what? Like it would be like, you know, he asked me like, oh yeah, so you got a bench back there. Like how much you benching? And like, I'm like benching 245 for like five, you know what I mean? But I'd be like, oh, like 275. Like, and just like say that. And like, I like, what, like, does that extra 30 pounds really mean anything to you? Like, probably not. Like, well, why am I so dishonest about it? About these like stupid facts. So those are the sorts of things that like those cognitive just like behavior clicks that you start like seeing in yourself and kind of hearing from like other people struggling with addiction, that it's kind of like a real thing. And starting to examining those things and where those are coming from, is really been like the mental health work that I've been trying to kind of be conscious of and do. So I like the idea of like rigorous honesty and trying to be like, you know, am I truly being honest with myself about one, how am I feeling about something? Like if I'm really pissed about something, I try to get down to like, what am I really pissed about? Like, you know, those kind of things. Whereas when I was drinking, it would certainly be something external. It'd probably be you, you know, like you screwed up, like, and I am the victim here, and this is why. And so trying to like explore those sorts of things for me has been really helpful. You know, when am I putting myself as like the victim cast and like where I had like something to do with the outcome there, and trying to find my place in it. And learn from it and like move on, you know, and like that's the other thing is like I have a, you know, an ability to sit there and overanalyze and just like beat yourself up constantly over stuff too, like that you should have done, should have said. And it's like you can just move on and like let it go. Like sometimes that's what I enjoy about the IOP group is like you get to like say those frustrations out loud and like now they're kind of like gone. Like they don't like echo in my mind as much as I get to like say them. So yeah, I would say like more along the lines of like how my personality has been built and like how it's been affected by addiction and what it is today and like where are the areas that I could improve on. Those are kind of like where my focus is.
You know, you brought up a couple interesting things. You know, one was just this, you know, when we're young, right, we utilize alcohol, especially when we're around peers, right? It's usually a you know, a fitting in type of notion, right? It's, you know, removing inhibitions type of notion, right? But then from there, you go, is there an underlying insecurity that I have, right? Is there something about me that's insecure? And so that's why, you know, again, maybe I embellish stories, you know, to make it, you know, to have the attention more on me and to feel more secure in myself. And I think that that's, you know, it's just, it's our personalities, right? And I think that, you know, as small as those things are, right, they're, it's good to be cognizant of it. It's good to also not be, you know, beat yourself up to death about it, right? Because before, right, we should just forget about them. now we actually have to deal with them, right? But, you know, and there, you know, again, I think that letting go is an important aspect, right? Because we all have to, you know, this whole process of addiction, right, and recovering from it is a self-love act, right? It's a, you know, it's a oh, taking care of ourselves, and those are all important aspects of it. Do you have any like routines that you've changed, any daily habits that you find that kind of help keep you like on track than the way that, because obviously what happens, right, is that when we stop all the drinking and addiction, right, we have a block of time in our day now that becomes more available to do it, do something with. Is there things that you've discovered about yourself that you hadn't noticed, or new things that you're doing with your day?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a unique experience because I decided to get sober on like my sober date, I think is August 14th without looking at anything. And then I got laid off at the end of, well, really like middle of November. I was like technically laid off the 1st of December, but I stopped working at middle of November. And so like, that was like a whole, like, I was like, great, now I'm sober and jobless. Like, like what an absurd turn. And like going into the holidays. And so I was like, well, you know, how do I like arrange my schedule now? And it's tough. It's like, it was tough in a few ways. So there was like the mental health aspect of it for me. Like I do like to go to the gym and like work out, and I enjoy like going to like my, like I can obviously work out here. But I like going to like gym with other people. It's nice to just like, even if I don't talk to anybody, it's just nice to like, I like see people that I know and I like give them a wave and like, hey, what's up? And, you know, I just kind of feel a little bit more connection, like doing that sort of stuff. So, and I always feel better if I do that kind of thing. Certainly like going outside, like has been and always is, like I have to like get out of the house. Like I don't like being like cooped up in my house. Like it's not something that I can really deal with. I have to like get out at least once a day. But then it's like I have to look for a job. So, and like job hunting on top of being just obnoxious and terrible is like not a schedule, right? Like it's just like an interview here and then like in the middle of the day and all this other stuff. And so on top of the fact that like we have a nanny watching our kid, which is handy for when I like need to just spend my time applying for jobs and crafting a resume and doing whatever and interviewing and stuff like that. But then like sometimes she doesn't show up and I'm like, all right, well, like now I'm like daycare today. So it's like me and the baby and like now I'm doing that for today. So it's like at the moment, I have yet to find a routine is what I would say. It's like the routines that I try and do that I like make sure that I try and do for myself is that I try and go to the gym like 4-5, if I could get away with it, 6 days a week. And then, okay. Didn't know if you were like frozen, your eyes were closed.
No, we're good.
It's like, oh no. I like to like make sure I go do those things. I like to try and get a walk in outside and just kind of like be outside. No earbuds, maybe just walk my dog, that kind of thing, and just kind of think and just kind of being outside, I find to be like really helpful for like my mood in general. I'm the cook in the house, so I tend to like do the grocery shopping and the dinner making and the things of that nature. And so those are always things that like I enjoy. I used to do them, you know, hammered or in some state of augmentation. So doing it sober now, and then also just kind of like having the time with my daughter, you know, I'd say that's one of the other things. And in terms of like the personality issues that you start to understand are issues when you kind of enter sobriety, like, you know, being there hammered is not the same as being there sober, like for one. And like, it sounds very simple. And people who probably aren't addicts are like, yeah, duh. Like, and I'm like, that's the same thing. Like, if I was in my active using, I'd be like, I was there. I was talking. I wasn't like passed out on the couch. You know what I mean? Like, I was like there, like doing stuff. But it's like, you aren't present. Like, you know, you're, I mean, if we want to get technical about it, it's like, you know, you're neurological systems like depressed, like on purpose. And you're not like thinking or really feeling or, and sometimes even remembering like what's happening. And so like that has been like something that's been, I've had the time to like think about and be like kind of cogitate on is like, what does it mean to be present in what I'm doing? Like if I, even if I don't have a routine, it's like, what does it mean for me to be present in the things that I'm doing while I'm doing them, you know, and like really think about those in particular. And so I feel very, I'm just very grateful that I, you know, I don't love being laid off and I don't love looking for a job, to be quite honest, but the fact that it's given me time to like spend with my daughter in early sobriety and really kind of like just feel the, like the presence of like what it means to be present, because I could have easily like just been like, go to another job. And like, I'm just working 40, 50 hours a week. And like, I come home and I try and be present for the time that I'm present, but like, I'm like present all day. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like there watching my kid all day, like being present and being sober, which is like, feels like such a different experience. Like it feels so much more intentional instead of like incidental, as if, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that's good.
So trying to find a routine, but I try and hold on to like the aspects that like work for me and keep the mental health alive. And it's like, you know, I like to eat well. So like, you know, that means I'm making food. I like to like feel well, which means I'm going to the gym and like getting out and like walking around and doing that kind of stuff. And I'm, you know, the rest of it, those are the things I can control for the most part. The rest of it kind of happens around me and I try and do what I can.
Yeah. Well, that's good stuff. You know, you touch base upon, obviously I agree with you. Presence is such a new reality, right? With, you know, when you're sober, right? Because if you're not high from drinking, you're hungover from drinking. And so there's that whole wave of, you know, but being present, it's nice because, you know, I've found that I don't ruminate like I used to. I don't worry about shit, right? My mind doesn't go too fast anymore. Of course, you know, I've definitely had a mental health piece that's been God saving as far as, you know, getting to understand what that means and proper medications and such. And also just, you know, when we're dealing with addiction, even when we socialize in our addiction stuff, it does feel like it's a solitary, isolating type of experience, right? So having a community of people that know exactly what you've been through, share similar stories and everything, to me, that's just been a massive anchor. And that's part of the reason why I've obviously instigated doing this, you know, this because I feel like there's so many people can benefit from recognizing that they have a community there that gets them, right?
Totally.
Has there been anything surprising to you that's just like, I mean, in your sobriety that you're just like, huh, I never really thought about it and I'm kind of living it and just like realizations, anything outside of what you've spoken about?
I would say like, I think there's like some expectation, and maybe this isn't for everybody, but like there are certainly like expectations, at least on some level for me, maybe not at the like the very top level, but somewhere down deep is like drinking is like my problem. You know what I mean? Like if I could just get rid of that problem, like everything else would be fine. And to some extent, that is true. But it also feels like, you know, drinking is sometimes like for me feels, you know, like the symptom. And like there's actually something at your core that is needs to be dealt with, right? And or addressed or otherwise or like, you know, this sort of thing. And so like I'd say like it's not super surprising to me, but it is still surprising, right? It's because you like on some level you're just kind of like, great, like I quit drinking, like everything should be great. And like it's like, well, it's not. And I kind of like, I think another thing I heard in AA, and this is like, this is kind of why I like to go to those things, is just because I just hear people say shit that I'm like, like that is profound. And it was along the lines of like, yeah, like quitting drinking didn't like make my life great, like, but it allowed me to like live my life. You know what I mean? Like instead of like constantly trying to escape my life. And like my life's not great all the time, you know what I mean? But it keeps me like moving forward. I think the quote that I heard was, you know, like how do you get through shit? Well, like you just don't stand in it, you keep walking.
Don't stand. I like oh, that. That's good.
Fair enough.
I love it.
And to some extent, yeah, you feel like when you're going to like quit drinking or quit whatever your drug of choice is like, that's your problems are all wrapped up in that. And like, that may be true. But it felt like for me, like it was kind of just the beginning. Like I was, those lack of coping skills become like really obvious. Like, it's like, well, like those were my coping skills, like drinking, running or fighting. And like those were them. You know what I mean? And like, now I'm down to just those two, and they seem woefully inadequate to just live my life. And so what other things can I find? So yeah, it was kind of like, well, quitting drinking feeling like the beginning of like the process instead of like the end goal, you know what I mean? I kind of found that to be at least a little bit surprising, if not intellectually, then emotionally, it felt that way.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate what you said there regarding, you know, is the addiction the problem or is it really a symptom of something else? Right. And I personally battled with that from, you know, marijuana use as well as alcohol use, was that, you know, and I've had friends and family friends that have, you know, witnessed somebody in their life and they're going, you know, they just quit smoking, you know, that problem's going to go away. Right. But then they actually themselves too, being the outside looking in, go, well, I'm actually thinking that this is just a symptom of what's going on underneath with them. Right. And you're just like, and then that's enlightening. I think that's profound. I think it's very good information. I'm going to forever steal. How do you get through shit? You don't stand in it from you. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Brother. Yeah, man. I'm going to keep talking.
That's it. You know, it's so simple yet so, you know, so important. You know, this has been great. I think we're at the point now where it's the big final question, right? You're presented with someone in your life, maybe somebody you know, somebody you don't know, coworker, somebody on the street. Maybe somebody witnesses the fact that maybe you're in a group of setting where people are drinking, you're not. But you got to do like a 30-second elevator pitch, let's just say, right? You can be good with this, right? Hey, you know, I think I have a problem. What do I do? What's my first steps? I think I have a problem. I really don't know where to go, where to begin. What do you say to somebody like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. It wasn't one that I was actually expecting. So, because as I said before, like, you know, it's kind of funny you bring that up because like, when I came back to work, I was pretty like open about where I was at. I was like, well, I went to rehab, not checked in, but you know, outpatient intensive rehab. And they're like, oh, people don't usually tell us that sort of detail when they come back. And I was like, well, like I, you know, I'd rather just tell you than try and be like, I was doing something else. I don't know. It just seems like more work on my end. It's not like I'm trying to be rigorously honest. It just seems easier to just tell you what I was doing. However, point being, this was an HR guy and he was like, hey man, like, you know, after he like kind of re-onboarded me back onto the company after I came back from leave and just kind of told him like how I was feeling, what I was doing, that kind of stuff. And it was just very frankly honest that like, I felt like I had a real problem with alcohol. I had to go to this group and it's worked out and I'm feeling pretty good. But obviously very early in the process. And so I'm still doing it. And it still feels kind of fragile sort of thing. And I don't, you know, I don't consider myself an expert in giving advice of any kind. But the guy was like, all right, yeah, like, let's check in like in 2 weeks, you know, like grab lunch or whatever. And I was like, okay, like, sure. And the 2 weeks like come up and he like, we're like, yeah, like let's grab lunch. And so I thought this was just like checking in, like him, like checking in on me, you know? And like, maybe that is like a typical alcoholic thing. It's like, this is about me. Like, it's all about me. Like it always is. but I did think it, I legitimately thought he was just checking in to be like, is this guy still like, you know, crazy or what? And so it like comes out. And so he's like, so tell me about IOP and like, you know, like how did you like follow it, like get into that? And I was like, well, dude, like I just like, I've been doing like, I'm really struggling with this for probably the last 10 years. It's become like just progressively worse. And it got to a point where I felt like I needed to like get real help. Like I needed to get real help. And like, you know what I did? Like I went on Google and was like, where do you go if you have an alcohol problem? Like, is there like rehab? Like what is rehab and where do you go? Like, how do you get into that? Like, who do you talk to? And so I was like, I found this group, this doctor and this IOP group. And I was like, all right, like that sounds like a solution. And I'm a man in need of solutions. So let me go do that. And he like really wanted to know kind of like what the structure was and what it was. And I was like, damn, dude, like this is an HR guy who's really attached to the investigation. So like, I just kept feeding him information. He's just like, so then he finally was just like, yeah, man, like I just got separated from my wife and like alcohol is like a real component of that. And he's like, I've never done anything in terms of trying to do something about it, but like, I'm thinking about it. And he's like, that's why I'm kind of asking you. And I'm telling you this because you've been so open about your experience that like makes me feel comfortable to tell you about my experience. And I'm like, oh, well, here I was thinking this is all about me, but apparently you've got problems too. So let's hear about them. So I guess to answer your question, the honesty about my journey is probably the best way that I would be able to answer that question. I don't feel like I'm in any sort of position to tell someone what to do. I could just say like, this is what I was doing and this is how it kind of worked out for me. And like, I'll let you kind of derive what you think from there. I certainly know some people that might know more than I know that I could probably hook you up with if you actually want to know anything more. And, you know, just kind of give you my authentic experience as much as I can tell you without, you know, telling you I'm benching 50 more pounds than I am.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, and yeah, I mean, obviously we all got to come to the table, right? We all have to be able to make that surrender statement. We all have to, you know, do the work, right? You know, nobody, you know, it's not like we can just walk in somewhere and by osmosis we're cured, right? We have to truly work on it. This has been awesome, James, but I think we've got it all, man. I appreciate the time, man. Happy Sunday to you.
Likewise.
And we'll, and as soon as we're all finished here, I'll let you know and I'll get you a copy of it so you can see it online and everything. Okay.
Perfect, man. Well, thanks for doing this. I think this is really valuable. It's something I would have enjoyed on the flip side, and I'll certainly be looking out for new episodes as you have them, man.
So awesome, buddy. You take care. Okay.
You too.
Awesome. Bye. Hello. Welcome to the Addict's Advocate, a podcast geared towards the suffering addict and those in recovery. This podcast does not provide any medical advice. No material on this podcast is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. Enjoy the show.